Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
And welcome, everyone, to our MotorWeek podcast number 75. Joining me in Studio C here at MotorWeek Central today is associate producer Ben Davis.
Hey.
Our writer-researcher, Patrick Lucas.
Excited to be here.
And Greg Carlos, our assistant producer, and who basically is involved with all of the testing these days. Greg, nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Okay. We've got a lightning round. Of course, we're going to look at the mailbag, and we're going to run down a trio of vehicles, or at least a trio of vehicle types. There's actually more than three. Honda Accord, we're going to take a look at some Audis, and the latest edition of the Porsche Boxster. So let's start with the 2013 Honda Accord, all new, ninth generation, much-watched car, gotten some good early reviews from the non-enthusiast press. The enthusiast press hasn't been quite so kind to it, but generally speaking, it appears to be more of what people are expecting in an Accord. But the question I've got for you folks is, given cars like the Sonata, the new Fusion coming, even the new Malibu, mid-size sedans that have tried to stretch the boundaries of styling, like the Kia Optima, is the Accord, and these cars, I might add, that are already out have been pretty successful, is the Accord enough of a change? Is it basically just going to be continue to be an alternative to the Toyota Camry? Is it on that level? Is it better? So give me your impressions of what you think Honda did with the new Accord. Greg, let me start with you.
I mean, to answer your question, I do think they did. I mean, I think they went far enough. They're definitely going in the right direction of making it sporty. Like you said, the Optima, it's sporty. People seem to want that, you know, good-looking car. And I don't know. I was looking at it. Honestly, I think they went a step further than the Camry in styling, I think. It definitely is more in the modern than Camry.
You buy into the observation that down the sides, all the side creases, if you put a shot of that, of the new Accord next to a BMW 3 Series, they look remarkably similar. So you think they did make a conscious effort?
Yeah, I definitely do.
Mr. Lucas, what's your opinion on the new Accord?
I mean, I agree with Greg. They definitely made a conscious effort. I mean, I think the Optima's pretty cool looking, kind of bests the Accord here. So I would still say it might play second fiddle to a car like that, but I mean, they're definitely a step in the right direction.
Were you disappointed?
No, I'm not disappointed at all. I still think it's a very good-looking car. I like the coupe a lot.
Ben, let me turn to you. Do you think that it's going to matter that the enthusiast press, which always seems to sort of downplay a new Accord as being less than what they want, do you think that really matters?
It's never really going to matter to an Accord buyer. In my opinion, I don't think they listen to the professionals as far as if an Accord's good, if the new Accord's bad. There's a tremendous amount of people in this world that drive every day, and most of them, unfortunately, aren't automobile enthusiasts. They just will buy the new Accord because it's all they've ever known.
Now, the Accord has bucked a trend here. They came out with both a new four-cylinder, and a six-cylinder, as they have before, where a lot of the competitors, like Sonata and Optima and the upcoming, the Malibu and the upcoming Fusion, are all going four-cylinder. Why do you think they did that? Do you think that they were just trying to make sure they hung on to their base, or are they not going with the flow? We talk about them being more modern, yet that seems to be a deviation.
That does raise some eyebrows. I mean, that six-cylinder you're speaking of does have cylinder deactivation. But, in a world where everybody's going smaller, Accord or Honda wants to use that V6, and not just only in the Accord as well.
Yeah, it does seem to me that with fuel economy being number one on everyone's mind, I mean, they already sell mostly all four cylinders anyway. You wonder why they kept it in their lineup, except maybe just to have an option.
And American families are big. If you load that thing up with a couple 200-pounders, you're going to need that V6.
Maybe to silence the enthusiasts, like we were saying. Enthusiasts love to bash on the Accord. Well, if they got rid of it completely, that's just something else for the enthusiasts to jump on.
That's a good point, too.
Yeah.
One big area where I think they made some interesting improvements, and I do think overall it's an improvement, is the interior. The old Accord basically had so many buttons on the center console, or the center stack of the dash, that you often could never hit the right one at the right time. Now they've gone to a large screen above the AC and client and stereo controls. And then if you go for the top level models, you actually get a touch screen for audio. That does seem to be a trend that we're seeing with more and more cars. We've even had a couple of very inexpensive cars in here lately with large touch screens for radios. Are you comfortable with that trend for interior controls on cars?
I hate it. I need a knob or a button to push, something that I know is working without taking my eyes off the road to look at it.
It seems – anybody else?
I agree with him on that. Touchscreen is just – to me, especially for me, I'm a taller person, so I got to lean back already because my head hits a lot of the ceilings in the cars. So
when you're one of these guys that drives with the sunroof open. So
exactly. But like he said, I don't even like the look that the touchscreen gets after touching it for 5 minutes. It's just like Ben said.
It's all fingerprinting.
I agree with
Ben. I like having it all in one central spot. Mm-hmm. It makes it a lot easier to navigate it. It just depends on whether you actually have the right, touchscreen and whether it's easier to touch or if it's something like another car that shall remain nameless.
You mean the Subaru?
Yeah, that is just
we have
to
a Subaru Impreza,
screen.
Which we love the car, but we hate the touchscreen on it.
Touching a flat surface never gets familiar.
That's true.
Which corner is the button that I'm looking for?
Okay, let's move along to our next car, or I should say cars, gentlemen. Audi A Series, A4, A5, and the supercharged S4 and S5. We recently had both of the S4 and S5 here and at work. These are fairly significant makeovers for these cars, compact luxury cars facing new competition like the ATS from Cadillac and so forth, and the new 3 Series. Overall impressions anyone has of the direction that Audi has gone?
Sheer awesomeness in the.
Gee, don't hold back, Ben.
That was like the first thing he said to me about the S4. Dude, it's wicked.
It's got to be the most efficient use of power I've ever driven in my life. And on the track, it lets you hang it out just enough to keep you feeling safe, but also make you feel like you're driving dangerously in a safe way. In other words, just having some fun. You could take it autocrossing and have a blast.
And the interesting thing about what you're saying is that, to me, both these cars felt extraordinarily solid. And only a few years ago, a generation ago, on these compact Audis, we all talked about how light they felt, and to the point that we described them as running on their tiptoes and tippy toes, and it just wasn't something that I particularly liked. Now we've got cars that feel anchored to the road, yet in a lot of ways are more agile and more fun.
And they're adding features that heightens the driver's senses too, like piping in the exhaust noise, for instance. That just feels incredible and sounds amazing.
That kind of marks the enthusiast if you have to pump sound into the car. That was such a great feature. Even when I was on the highway trying to get good gas mileage, I'm not trying to blow through, 90 miles an hour, but just being able to control how much I hear, that's cool. And everything Ben said, I was very happy. It's just a very solid, it's a driver's car is what it comes down to.
I'd love to give it some negative praise, but I can't.
You guys haven't been around as long as Ben has, but you do wonder if the new generation, your generation, is going to be gravitating more towards Audi as the sort of pinnacle rather than BMW.
I could see that. I love these cars.
Having a Quattro all-wheel drive was sort of a novelty for a while, but they've now turned it into an almost indispensable handling system.
That car is very aggressive.
Beautiful cars on the inside, too.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh.
We've all had a chance to take a look at some of the new Cadillac ATS, and frankly, the ATS interior, it is the only thing I can think visually that appeals to my eyes in this class of car. Probably more is the Audi interiors. They're both very nicely done.
Well, and the functionality of it, to go back to the touchscreen, Ben and I both agree that the touchscreen is not the way to go. Well, the Audis have the knob there on the right next to the shifter, to where it's very natural to
You're
have
You're actually
your hand
going
there already.
To say something positive about the joystick, about the Audi it's, system is the best of those out there.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a joystick; it was a knob.
Well, it's a knob, yeah. But we sort of.
Well, to me, my hands.
You got the four quadrants around.
Yeah,
well,
I mean, I don't know. I just.
But you liked it.
I did like it.
Well,
yes.
That's interesting, because that, generally speaking, the console-mounted center controllers like iDrive and so forth have not gone down as well as some. But you actually preferred it to.
Yes, I definitely did.
Well, there's a strange guy in every bunch, but now that's why one of the things we do here on this program is make sure that our road tests include a wide variety of opinions from all parts of the staff.
I'll be the wide.
And moving on to a car I think we had a lot of opinions on is the new generation Porsche Boxster. This car, sort of, I guess it was the first of the new Porsches developed after Volkswagen started to take control of the company. And, of course, Porsche now is part of Volkswagen. There have been some mentions by enthusiasts about how it's less of a sports car. We can think of a couple of things they've done that might make it so. But what's your opinion? You had a chance to drive the new Boxster S. A heck of a car as far as a sports car goes. But what was it more or less than you expected?
You know, it was a little bit less than I expected.
Why?
I mean, I'm not taking anything away from it. It's just, and I don't know. It's just, I haven't driven a lot of Porsches in my life, but maybe I just had high expectations coming in. You know, it has the speed. It sounds great, but I don't know. I can't even tell you exactly what I was looking for. It just didn't
seem. Yeah, but I think I know.
Stuff.
But Patrick, how about you?
I thought it was a beautiful car inside and out, but yeah, I mean, it just didn't kind of.
Didn't like light it. Your fire.
Exactly.
No doubt it's stunning to look at. I think what everybody's trying to grasp is, for the Highline performance model, 315 horsepower just doesn't give you the feeling that you need to have.
It didn't throw me into the seat like I expected a Porsche
it
would.
It doesn't feel like a very strong car.
The thing that got me is that it was too refined. I mean, again, because I've got age on all of you, you know, I remember the first Boxster, and it was supposed to be the kind of everyman's Porsche.
16 years ago.
I know, but it does. 16 years, to me, isn't very long.
It makes me feel old.
The point is that this car is so refined. I mean, it was a luxury sports car, which I never used that term of the Boxster before. But the thing that really threw me for a loop was the fact that they've done away with the handbrake for the parking brake and gone with an electronic parking brake and hill hold assist. And I just think that's sacrilege.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it just, that to me just took, even though most people don't use the handbrake except for parking, they certainly don't use it for things like J-turns and stuff like you see in the movies. But having it there before, you felt like you were in a sports car. Now I think you're in a two-seat convertible. So, which is a difference. So the car, as much as I love the car, and it did everything that you asked of it, it didn't make you lust after it.
No, but it not only did it do everything you asked of it, it also, when you weren't asking anything from it, it also did that very well, too. It would cruise back roads or go to the grocery store with no problem either.
There's a point where if things get too perfect, they become I don't want to use the word boring, but they just aren't as attractive. Yeah. I don't know. Guys, anything else to add? Wonderful car. Does everything you expect it to be. Didn't light everyone's fire. Maybe a little underpowered for its price and class.
Yeah. It's verging on that rolling artwork slash. Is it art or is it a car?
Right.
It's kind of blending.
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's they're almost trying to refine it too much. Maybe they took it a step too far, like the e-brake. I didn't even expect that they would put an electric powered button in there, so I'm looking all over for the e-brake. And then not only that, but you have to push it instead of pull. It's opposite of what you would think it is to engage it and to disengage it. So that it didn't make me
hate
the car.
It gives me a complex when I drive it.
There are a number of literary works talking about how you don't really want to be too perfect.
But you still get looks when you're driving around.
Oh, yeah. It is a looker. Okay. Thanks very much for all the comments. We're now going to move on to our lightning round, where our producer, Michelle Parker, is over there manning the bell. And at the end of 2 minutes, she will hit it repeatedly until we stop. And here we go. We're going to discuss Texas, the big state of Texas. And they now have the highest speed limit in the nation. Lawmakers recently approved an 85-mile-per-hour speed limit on a toll road that opens later this year. Is 85 too fast for the average drivers, or is it not fast enough?
Well, that's way too fast, man. Way too fast.
How come?
What do you base that on? Everything's bigger in Texas.
Because
and faster now.
People are too occupied with other things other than driving. So, granted, there might be a small percentage of people that love that speed and are comfortable with that speed. But before you know it, there's going to be somebody messing up at that speed.
Yeah,
that's going to create.
I agree on that part. Somebody will mess up eventually. But, I mean, I've taken a road trip. I've driven pretty much every part of America, and there's not a lot out in Texas.
That's
a lot of straight, flat roads. So, you can get away with going 85 miles per hour, but yes, I hate to say it.
So it's road dependent.
I hate to say it, but it's only a matter of time before something happens.
The question is, since there's so much of nothing out there, I wonder if they've even got cell service on that 85-mile-per-hour stretch.
When you do crash.
Greg, comment?
You
have to get out and drive with the rest of mankind on a daily basis.
Yeah. First instinct is, it's not too fast. I mean, I think that slow speeds cause more accidents. But now, and it wasn't even until Ben brought up the point that there is a lot of more distractions now. Like 85, and that's not what you're going to be going.
No, you're going to go 95.
Yeah. It might be a tad too fast, but. Maybe this is the test. We'll see.
I worry about the safety aspect. Not so much from I think that drivers are capable or not. I actually think most of them are not that capable. But I'm worried about the safety aspects of the car. Are the brakes up to it? Tires?
I think it'd be trucks mostly.
Well, maybe, but you can. I worry. You see somebody out there with a semi-bald tires. Trying to keep up with the trucks at 85
Absolutely.
Miles an hour.
It's always about the next guy's car.
And that causes heat. And so I would think that it's not practical. Practical, of course, but it seems like you'll have to pass a safety inspection like the trucks do before you get on it. I think we just filled up that 2 minutes. Thank you, Michelle. Let's move on now to our Motor Week mailbag. Remember to submit your questions, and if you get chosen, you will get a fabulous form-fitting Motor Week t-shirt.
Not too form-fitting.
Not too form. No, it's all one size fits all. So here we go. Robert wants to know, I would like to know if using gas from a big box discount store, he's talking about maybe Costco's or Sam's Clubs or BJ's, has any effect on the life of the engine. What do you folks think?
First of all, how long have those stores been really selling gas?
Oh, I don't know, 10 years maybe?
Yeah, so I'm thinking any long-term effects, which probably start to be showing now, and I don't know if any studies have been done, but, it's something you got to monitor yourself if you're going to use them. If watch your gas mileage, see what you're getting, and if you're getting significantly less, then, it could very well be, but I haven't heard anything major.
Robert assumes that they get their gas from one place, and chances are they don't. Chances are that one fill-up might come from Exxon and one fill-up might come from Shell, whoever's got excess gasoline.
Well, that's a good point, too.
Yeah, so I think what you would, if you are having any doubts, then you probably need to switch to a name brand that has a proprietary additive package. But there doesn't seem to be any evidence so far that buying off-price gasoline has a serious effect. I know there's some ads that are being run that show I think Shell is running ads, or maybe it's Chevron or both, that show deposits around the intake valves if you buy cheap gas versus their gas
their
with special additives.
Gas.
But I'm not sure if you know if you can make that statement about somebody like a big box store, because their gas could be coming from lots of name brands.
Very true.
So it's a matter about price. But if you are worried about it, go pay another nickel a gallon and get it from somebody from a name brand. And, Robert, I hope that sort of semi-answers your question, or at least puts your mind at rest. I don't think you're under serious problems about long-term use, but, you know, might want to pay a little bit more and take the worry away. And that sort of brings to the end of our Motor Week podcast, number 75. That's 75. That's a big number.
That's a lot.
It seems like we almost ought to be popping champagne. I guess we'll save that for the 100th one that will come up before too much longer. Our audio engineer for today and for most of our podcast is Jim Bigwood, who makes sure that we sound more intelligent than we probably are. And very carefully edits out all the goofs that we do. Our podcast, which actually that's very few because we're so well-versed. Podcast creator Bob Mixter, who thought up this idea in the first place. And our podcast producer, the lady with the bell, Michelle Parker. Thank you very much for joining us on our Motor Week podcast. We have a lot of fun bringing those to you. We hope you'll watch Motor Week on both PBS. Check your our listings at motorweek.org for the PBS station near you. And also on Tuesdays on the Velocity Channel on your local cable or satellite service. And that's it. John Davis for Motor Week. Thanks for listening. And we hope to catch you around our podcast microphones again very soon.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at MotorWeek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.